little friend.
It's time to get in the zone.
In the zone.
Oh, my God. The most amazing, sensational, dramatic, heartrending, exciting, thrilling finish in the history of college football.
Down goes Frazier. Down goes Frazier.
5 seconds left in the game. Over. You believe in miracles? Yes!
The Zone is sponsored by Helena Agro Enterprises, The Fieldhouse, and Fashion Furniture.
Swung on, hit the deep center field. Bernie Williams goes back.
It's Friday. It's the Field House, and you're in the zone. Here are your hosts, George Takata.
You talking to me?
And Nick Anderson.
You talking to me?
It's time to get in the zone.
What are you worried about? I'm in the zone, man.
All right, everybody. Let the holiday weekend begin. Or let the holiday week begin, for crying out loud. Back in the zone, live from the Field House in Fresno on Copper. I'm George Takata from Reilly College. It is so great to be back on this program. We've got a big, big show. There's a lot to talk about. I was off last week because of the Vegas Bowl coverage. But this week we're going to kick things off with a big trade in baseball. The Dodgers getting rid of two fan favorites, really. Yasiel Puig, Matt Kemp headed to Cincinnati. Is this a move to create some space for Bryce Harper? We'll talk to Pat Ware about it. Pat knows a little bit about baseball. National champion with Fresno State, former Washington State assistant coach, now a Buchanan assistant coach. He'll break down this trade for us. We'll talk to Mario Gomez, the founder, former bark board creator. He's talking about, is this the best Fresno State football team in school history? We'll dissect that a little bit. Lots to talk about with the bowl game. Can't wait to talk to Trent Tompkins, who officially signed with UC Davis, the Central High quarterback who set all sorts of section records. He's going to talk about his national letter of intent with the Aggies. He's just wrapping up his own little signing party, and he'll be headed our way here in a little bit. You'll hear from Trent, and former Fresno State quarterback Tom Brandstetter will join us, talk about how happy he is, how proud he is of this year's Bulldogs. He'll break down Marcus McMarion for us a little bit. He also has an interesting story about Josh Allen that he'll share with us as well. So four guests. Lots of stuff to cover in 120 minutes. First things first, I was in Vegas. Wouldn't have missed it for anything to see some program history. Getting that 12th win, beating Arizona State. Sure, they were without N'Keal Harry. Sure, they were without their best defensive player as well. Does not diminish the accomplishment of winning a Vegas Bowl for the first time. Does not diminish the accomplishment of 12 wins for the first time in program history. And possibly a top 15 ranking in the nation when all is said and done with all these games. Just how can you go finish this 2017 Fresno State football season 12-2? How can you not be 100% satisfied with it? Sure, that loss to Minnesota stung a little bit, but it was a great call. Just, Josh Hokett's pass just a little underthrown to Rice in the end zone. And you lost to Boise in your regular season, but they avenged that in the championship game on the blue turf, exercised those demons, win a Mountain West title. And then you go to Vegas and take care of business against an Arizona State team that was in every game that they played. You handed them their worst loss of the season. Ronnie Rivers runs for 200-plus, shades of his dad. You have to come away from this season 100% satisfied with how everything worked out. Would it have been nice to win on the road in Minnesota? Yeah, sure. Would it have been nice to take care of Boise in a regular season as well? Yeah, of course. Would it have been nice for Memphis to upset UCF after a promising first half to that championship game? Of course. But you go 12-2, you win your conference title, you win your bowl game, you're going to finish in the top 20 at least in all the polls, postseason polls. And you wrap it up with the tremendous incoming recruiting class on the early signing period, starring a couple of local guys. That includes Jalen Cropper, who's going to step right in and become an offensive weapon. I mean, football you talk about year-round now. Fresno State football you can talk about it year-round up until August 31st when they go to USC, and you can be really excited about it. It's going to be a change of quarterback. It's probably going to be Jorge Reyna. He's already assumed the leadership role. I saw him tweeting out to the incoming recruits, welcome to the team, welcome to the Dogs, can't wait to have you in camp. He's already assuming that leadership role. I think Fresno State's not going to drop off much at all at the quarterback position. Jorge's had 2 years to learn the system, watching Marcus, watching this offense click in motion on the field. I'm sure he had limited duty this year. He was involved in that great two-point play at UCLA. But I think, you know, the future still remains very bright with Jorge Reyna at the helm for the Bulldogs in 2018. At least that's what it looks like going into camp. 2 years to learn Jeff Tedford's very complicated offense and very high success level in the junior college level and in high school, too. I'm excited to see Jorge Reyna throw the pill around and throw it to just get used to maybe this. Reyna to Cropper, touchdown Bulldogs. How's that sound? I think that sounds really good. Reyna to Rice with Rivers running the ball. Jordan Mims coming back healthy. Hokett back for his senior year. Hopefully Jeff Allison decides, I had so much fun at Fresno State my junior year. I'm just going to come back for my senior year. Hopefully become a higher draft pick than what he would be in the 2019 draft. If he sticks around at Fresno State, if he decides to stay, has another monster season, he'll be a higher draft pick in 2020 than he would be in 2019. I could almost assure that. So it's all good. We were so excited last year talking about, oh, they won the Hawaii Bowl, 10 wins, Marcus McMarion's back, all these receivers, Keyshawn Johnson's back, Allison's back, Mike Bell, all these guys. We were pumped up all offseason last year talking about this team. I'm even more excited with these great guys leaving the team about the legacy they've left behind and how exciting it is to talk about the 2019 Bulldogs with a lot of looking back to 2018 and going, damn, that was fun. That was fun to see those guys make snow angels in it on the blue turf. That was fun to see the pick six by Tank Kelly on national television. That was so much fun to see Ronnie Rivers break loose for that 60-some-odd yard touchdown run in the late in the third quarter after the Bulldogs really committed three turnovers in such a short amount of time, including back-to-back passes of Marcus McMarion that were picked off. You're like, oh, man, we haven't seen that all year. We haven't seen that all Marcus's two-year career at Fresno State. But the veteran team they are, they got it together, held Arizona State 3 points a second half, stifled them in yardage. Like Arizona State went nowhere in the second half, yardage-wise anyway. And sure, you know, not having their best offensive threat on the field helped Fresno State out a lot, but their running back, Benjamin, was running all over the Bulldogs in the first half, stuffed him too. So the adjustments were made, and the Bulldogs went on to win 31-20, and we all got to celebrate on the field. Including that guy who's cheerleader's dad who broke his leg while jumping down to the turf to go celebrate. I mean, even he was happy. I broke my leg, but go Bulldogs, go in the hospital, I'll be fine. Put me in a cast, give me a red cast, take me home, I'll be happy. And so I heard on Tony's show, they were talking a little bit about, was that one of the best bowl win ever? Just bowl game specifically. To me, the Freedom Bowl, the Freedom Bowl, unless Fresno State goes to a Fiesta Bowl and wins it or something like that, will always be number one. And if you're just ranking the bowl wins, how can you not think MPC Computers Bowl as number two, really? I mean, Fresno State beat a ranked Virginia team in that game in Boise in overtime on a walk-off touchdown pass from Paul Pinneger to Steven Spock. To me, that's the number two bowl win because they beat a ranked opponent in Virginia. I think they were ranked 18th at the time. And they beat them in overtime on national TV in Boise behind Paul Pinneger for his third bowl win as Bulldogs starting quarterback. So, to me, it's Freedom Bowl number one, MPC Computers Bowl number two. And really, if you're just counting bowl games, you might want to throw a Cow Bowl win in there too, or maybe number three. The Vince Wesson walk-off game winning touchdown sheer excitement being in Bulldog Stadium and winning that game. I think it was over Bowling Green. That was before I even moved here. So I don't know the year. I think it was 1985 or something like that. I mean, but, you know, don't forget those Cowboy wins and the excitement. And then maybe this win over Arizona State would be number four in my book. So I'll go Freedom Bowl, MPC Computers, number two, beating a ranked team. Freedom Bowl needs no explanation. The Cal Bowl with the Vince Weston touchdown to win it. And then this Las Vegas Bowl, number four. Just bowl games only. You're not outside implications, whatever, just the game itself. I would put MPC, I would put the Vegas Bowl win over Arizona State at number four on all Bulldogs' all-time bowl wins. Of course, there's other ones. There's beating UCLA in the mud in San Jose, beating Georgia Tech in the mud in San Jose. All bowl wins are big. All bowl wins mean so much to the program. But that's what we do in the media. We rank stuff. That's just how it is. Rank the coaches. Who are the best coaches in Fresno State history? Rank them. Rank the quarterbacks. How would you rank Marcus McMarion in regards to Derek and David Carr and Trent Dilfer and Kevin Sweeney and Mark Barsotti and all those guys? Where would you rank Marcus? I mean, those are great topics. We don't want to hurt anybody's feelings, right? I mean, we talk about Marcus. In two seasons, he won a Mountain West Championship, two bowl games, and was a bowl game MVP. And he went 21-4. I mean, where do you want to rank him in regards to achievements as a Bulldog? You know, David Carr had the Bulldogs ranked in the top 10 in the country, beat the Sports Illustrated preseason number one team in the country in Oregon State at home, and was in the Heisman, was a finalist in the Heisman voting, the top seven, I think. So where would you put him in regards to Marcus? But David didn't win a championship. David didn't win a bowl game. So there's that. You have Derek Carr, who won two Mountain West championships and set all sorts of records at Fresno State, yardage, completions, and all that stuff. Didn't win a bowl game. I went to in bowls. What about Paul Penninger? Didn't win a championship, but won three bowl games. And almost won a fourth. And almost beat USC. So you could jumble it however you want. It's just so much fun to talk about. There really is no wrong answer. But Marcus McMarion leaves behind an incredible legacy in a short amount of time. And looking forward to seeing what Jorge Reyna can do with it next season, if that is indeed what's going to happen in 2019. All right, we're going to hit the break. Got to talk about this Dodgers trade. A lot of Dodgers fans out here, they're ordering a little extra drinks because they're toasting Yasiel Puig and Matt Kemp. We'll break down this trade and see what this means for the future for the Dodgers. Does that mean Bryce Harper's coming around the bend? We'll do that with Pat Ware. And don't forget Trent Tompkins as well. 4:30, you're listening to The Zone on 940 ESPN from the Fieldhouse, the Valley's local sports leader.
You're in The Zone, sponsored by Helena Agri Enterprises, LLC, the Fieldhouse, and Fashion Furniture. Here are George Takata and Nick Anderson.
Back, everybody, to the Field House here on Copper in Fresno. George Takata here with the wonderful Zone program. Big news in baseball. With Hot Stove wrapping up, and then the trades happen after that, right? So the A's trade for Rangers second baseman Jerickson Profar, that's cool. That's all fine and dandy. Really, nobody wants to talk about that except for me. So we won't really get into that. That means Jed Lowry's tenure as Oakland A is over. Jed Lowry had a great season for the A's, but he's asking for a lot of money, 34 years old, switch hitting second baseman. So the A's get a lot younger by acquiring, even younger, by acquiring Jerickson Profar, who they have a couple of years left before they have to pay him big bucks as a 25-year-old. Hit .254, I think, 20 homers, 77 ribbies. And just showing signs of being a great star in the league. So he comes to Oakland, but the A's still need a lot of starting pitching. They have no starters. I don't know what's going to happen with their starting pitching. They've got a bunch of unproven guys that are probably going to take over, but they need to sign some veterans. They lost Trevor Cahill, who signed with the Angels, 1 year, $9 million. Cahill, great at home, horrible on the road. Now we bring in Pat Ware, my good friend. Resume is awesome, national champion with Fresno State. Former Washington State assistant coach, now a Buchanan assistant coach, former Clovis East head baseball coach. But most importantly, my teammate at Clovis West, our JV year in 1988. Pat, how you doing, man? Thanks for the time.
God, I thought that was 1987.
No. It was 1988, Pat.
A long time ago.
A very, very, very long time ago. Hey, I appreciate it. And, you know, being the baseball guy you are, I'm sure you watch off-season stuff very closely. And so what does this mean for the Dodgers to just get rid of Alex Wood, Matt Kemp, Yasiel Puig, and their backup catcher Kyle Farmer to the Reds for Homer Bailey, who I hear they're going to release, and a couple of prospects? Does that mean that all signs point to them at least making a serious run at Bryce Harper?
That's what I think. I can't believe you don't want to talk about Profar first with your A's, though. I mean, they're getting a pretty steady infielder in exchange for a relief guy. I mean, that's pretty good. What was Pagan's numbers last year? About 60 innings?
Yeah, he was terrible. Yeah. I mean,
giving up 55 hits. And they got to sign Fister, don't they?
I would love the A's to sign Doug Fister.
It gives you a steady veteran. Yeah, you got a guy who's going to eat up a ton of innings for you, win games.
That would be
close
great.
To home.
True. Very, very true. But we'll see. I mean, I would love for them to get Edwin Jackson back, but I hear he wants too much money, which the A's, too much money is $7 million. I mean, so, you know,
right.
We're trying to get guys on the cheap still. It is what it is. But great pickup for Oakland, I think.
Here's what the Dodgers lose with Kemp and Puig. They lose 44 home runs and 202 strikeouts.
Yep.
What they're getting if they sign Harper is 34 home runs and 169 strikeouts. He just happens to be left-handed. So
coming off a down year, too.
Is it a good trade? I don't know. I mean, I think Kemp's got a lot of baseball left in him, and I think he's productive.
Yep.
Puig is the enigma that, you know, Mattingly tried to get him to play a certain way, and they got rid of Mattingly. So maybe this is the second manager in Dave Roberts who's tried to get him to do things the right way, and that hasn't worked either, and now he's just packaged in a deal. But I think you're right. I think it points to them trying to get Harper, free up money to go out and make a serious run at him. What's he want, a 10-year deal?
Something like that. Something ridiculous, yeah.
I don't know. I mean, if you look at how hard he plays and how many moving parts are involved in that swing. I mean, there's some chaos in that swing. It's not a Mike Trout, simple, short, quick swing. There's a ton of movement with Harper. How long is his body going to be able to do that? When does the quick twitch start to break down with him? 10 years is an awful long time to go out on a bat, I think. And what they gave up, they're not getting back what they gave up if they sign him, and that's a big if. They may have just dumped 44 home runs and 202 strikeouts.
Here's my question. If do the Dodgers do this if they don't do this without thinking that they've got a really good chance of signing Harper, right? Because if they don't, then where do they put their money? In more starting pitching maybe, or who knows? But I'm thinking if I'm Magic Johnson and the Dodgers management, well, you know, we've got a pretty good shot of signing Harper. We don't do this unless we think we've got more than a 50% chance of signing this kid, right?
Well, there's an old saying in athletic administration. You don't fire a coach unless you have somebody to replace him that you think's better. So big league GMs are pretty smart guys. They do their homework. They have a plan. They have contingency plans. They have prospects in the system if neither one of those plans work out. And they've probably been in communication with agents and players, talk to players, and enough that they've got a pretty good indication of where they're going with this. I don't think they get rid of those two guys unless they feel really solid that they're about 90% sure they're going to get a yes from Harper and he's going to end up in Los Angeles. And if I'm Harper, and hopefully someone's been honest with him enough about the way he plays and what that swing looks like 5 years from now, mm-hmm. or 7 years from now as he gets a little older and his body starts to slow down, because not everybody's like you and I, George. Not everybody
Fine
can
wine.
Still play the way they played when they were 21.
Right, I can still Harper's, head to the warning track.
Right. Harper's going to start to slow down as he gets older, and doing that in the warm weather of Los Angeles is a much better option for him than doing it in Philadelphia when it's 40 degrees on opening day and 40 degrees during the playoffs if they get there. I mean, if I'm him, I'm thinking a warm weather destination if I want a 10-year deal. He's not going to want to play on turf, and he's not going to want to play in cold weather as he starts to get older, in my opinion.
So if the Dodgers don't get Harper, do they just take that money and go, let's find the best starting pitching available to help out Kershaw and Ryu and those guys? Would that be the direction they go, you think?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, they've got guys that can play in the outfield. I think more importantly, they might want to invest in figuring out how not to strike out every other at-bat during the playoffs. That might help them win games. Yeah. It's not like they weren't good enough. They had a team that could have won the World Series if they'd had the same commitment to a team plan that Boston did. I don't think it was about their players. I think it was about their offensive philosophy as an organization. That might be something they want to address because they throw Harper in there. He's got a lot of swing and miss. I mean, 169 strikeouts last year. That's a lot. That's a big number. So that doesn't show up as much in 162 games, but when you're talking about a best out of seven series, now all of a sudden it's a big deal. That's when big league baseball starts to look like college baseball and games are more important. Guys bunt, guys pick more. Managers manage more, and you have to make contact with two strikes because it wins games. Because there's more pressure on defenders then.
Right.
Not game number 84 in Houston. Nobody cares. But game six or game seven, it matters. And you throw Harper in that mix as the solution. Is he? I don't know. We'll see.
Going into this offseason, obviously, you know, a lot of teams are going to make moves, tweak things here and there. The Diamondbacks, well, they're in rebuild mode after trading their best player, Paul Goldschmidt, to St. Louis. When you look at the landscape of baseball now, it's just everybody is still chasing the Red Sox, you think?
Yeah, I think the Red Sox and the Yankees probably have the best players. The job Cora did with that group this season was phenomenal. And I know it's an organizational thing as well. It's almost like you take the regular season and you do what you do during the regular season. You're built to win or you're not based on your pitching. But then you get to those stints in the playoffs where things are so much more important and their guys just handle pressure well. They're not just talented. They're good baseball players. And there's a lot of guys in the big leagues that are extremely talented that you watch a big league game. And I think it was that extra inning playoff game where 2/3 of the outs were strikeouts or 70% of them or something like that. It's just almost unwatchable. But the Red Sox don't play that way. And it's no coincidence they won the World Series. I do. I think you're right. I think everybody's chasing that. But everybody wants the big star because it puts butts in the seats, too. There's a business side to it also.
Right. And the big superstars' butts in the seats are the Bryce Harpers of the world, not really necessarily a guy who plays every fifth day, right? Is that one of those deals?
Right. You need that guy every fifth day to stand on the mound and win a game for you, but he's not going to sell as many jerseys.
You coached Aaron Judge, so you've seen him grow. You helped recruit him to Fresno State. We've talked about this before. How proud are you of his growth and development? Maybe just not obviously on the field too, but off the field he's mature beyond his years as well.
He's an unbelievable kid. And he's not a kid anymore, but the struggle he went through in that stretch his rookie year, his ability to fight through that just really kind of set who he was as a worker and how dedicated he was to doing things the right way and get better and self-reflect. And then I know he put a lot of work into the offseason to change his swing a little bit because he knew as he adapted, pitchers were going to adapt. And then all the things he's doing off the field with his campaign against anti-bullying or his campaign for anti-bullying. It's kind of a double negative. He's against bullying. Let's just put it that way.
We know what you mean.
Yeah. And his mom's involved in that and what he gives back to his community at Linden. And just all of it is a complete package besides being a rookie of the year and a superstar and doing it on the biggest stage. It's the way he handles himself. He's got good people around him. He's got a great agent. You know, he came from a good family. always represented our program well when he was here at Fresno State. It's not a surprise that he's having the success he's having.
Are the strikeouts just something that's going to just keep happening with him? You just take it as it comes because you know he's going to get on base anyway with the walks, and you know he's going to hit bombs and drive it 100-plus when he's 100% healthy. You just take the strikeouts with it. It's just something that's always going to be with him, or do you think he can actually reduce those as well?
I don't know. I mean, I think he's going to strike out a lot. I think guys that hit a lot of home runs are going to strike out a lot. That's not new. You know, Reggie Jackson did, Babe Ruth did, Hunter Killebrew did. Guys who hit a lot of home runs strike out a lot. The epidemic is the guys who don't hit a lot of home runs that strike out almost as much.
Right.
That part of Major League Baseball, I think the players need to address it. Management needs to address it. Because they're losing people as fans, I think, because the game just becomes nothing's happening. Nobody's playing defense. You're seeing a pretty one-sided game at the big league level now. And when it's a guy like Aaron Judge or it's a guy like Reggie Jackson when he played and a guy like Babe Ruth when he played, those guys you expect to swing and miss more. There's going to be more swing and miss because the reward is that much greater. You take 200 strikeouts with Judge because you know he's going to hit 45 to 50.
Right.
But you don't want 200 strikeouts out of your second baseman who's going to hit 15.
Exactly.
It's just not a good trade-off.
Aaron Judge going to win a gold glove during his career, do you think?
I mean, he might win a golden arm.
Yeah.
I mean, the rate he throws guys out, I think that's the thing that might surprise people about him with as big and strong as he is, how well he moves, how agile he is, and what a good defender he is in the outfield. And his arm's a legitimate defensive weapon. You can't say that about too many big leaguers anymore.
Right.
I mean, it's tough to run on him. Even a ball that takes him laterally, a guy going first to third, it's not automatic he's going to be safe.
Last thought. Now you're at Buchanan, helping out a legendary coach in Tom Donald. How's that been like for you? I know Buchanan struggled last year, but you guys had a young team, but how are things going for you in Bear Country now?
Oh, it's great. It's been a great fall. Coach Donald's been fantastic. The kids are fantastic. We've got as good a high school players as you're going to have. We got a handful of kids that have committed to Division I schools. They go about their business the right way. You know, there's a really good coaching staff there between not just Coach Donald, but also, you know, Brian Marsubian and Jimmy Wilson. John Sylvia and those guys, and they all played pro ball. They get it. They're organized. They know what to coach. They know how to coach kids, and they're good for kids. It's been fun, and this should be a fun year.
All right. Well, I look forward. I mean, I got to come out. I mean, I got to come out and see these Bears and catch up with you as well on the field. I'm looking forward to see. Track baseball is always fun to watch. It doesn't matter who plays who. It always seems to be 2-1 or 5-4, or always competitive, and you add to that with your baseball knowledge to that staff. Hey Pat, thanks a lot.
It'll
for
be a fun year.
Oh, I guarantee it will be. Merry Christmas to you and your family. Thank you so much for the
Merry
time.
Merry Christmas.
And hope to see you in person sometime soon, bud. Appreciate you.
Anytime, George. I'll talk to you soon.
All right. Thank you, Pat Ware, joining us. Yeah, it sets the table. Dodgers, Bryce Harper. Don't buy the T-shirt yet. Don't get the Bryce Harper numbered jerseys yet with the Dodgers logo on it just yet. But all signs point to it. Boy, oh boy. Bellinger, Harper, Turner, Muncy. Wow. That'd be something else. All right, we've got to take a break. Trent Tompkins is in the house. He is here at the Field House. And he will join me live to talk about his commitment to UC Davis. That is next. You are in the zone, live from the Field House, 940 ESPN, the Valley's local sports leader.
You're in the zone, sponsored by Helena Agri Enterprises, LLC, the Field House, and Fashion Furniture. Here are George Takata and Nick Anderson.
All right. It is always great to have guests live at the Field House with me, and for the second time in the short time that I've done this fine program, that we have now former Central High School quarterback Trent Tompkins joining me. Now recently signed with the UC Davis Aggies is where he will continue his football career. Hey, man, congratulations. How you doing, man?
I'm doing great. How are you?
Doing really great. I mean, let's just start off by talking about your accomplishments at Central. I mean, you had video game stats. I mean, you threw for 5,001 yards. You ran for 1,001 more. I think you ran for 7 touchdowns, and you threw for 65.
Yeah.
Is that about right?
Yeah.
Okay. When you look back at that and doing that in only 14 games, were you even kind of – you look back and go, not bad.
You know, sometimes. At the moment, I was just happy we were winning. Really, mm-hmm. I was happy to win games and kind of win back-to-back. That's what my main goal. But looking back at it, it's like it's kind of a crazy, surreal moment. So, you know, I'm just happy had a great season with my guys, really.
So now you sign with UC Davis, Dan Hawkins, who we know from being head coach of Boise State mm-hmm. and his success there. And we know him as a great offensive mind, a great person. Fantastic football mind.
Yeah.
When he comes to visit you in Fresno or you go there or however that process worked in the recruiting process, what did you take from him? What did you like about Coach Hawkins the most that said, you know what, I want to be an Aggie?
Yeah, he's such a unique coach, like a unique person, just a great human being. He's a great coach. He's all about the kids, family, everything. It's just a real he's a different coach. He's such a good person in general. Just like I really felt like I had a connection with him and Coach Bile, the OC, and with Coach Hawkins just being a family guy, just all about family and everything. So kind of felt like it was a really good a good situation and program for me.
Does his style match the way you play?
I definitely feel like he likes, you know, he wants to win, really. So I feel like he believes in me, so then I'm believe in him and the whole program, really.
Plus, you get a great education. You're going to a UC school.
Yeah.
You're going to a place that is committed, I think, $41 million to upgrading its football facilities.
Oh, yeah.
You're going to a place that has aspirations of joining Fresno State in the Mountain West.
Yeah.
By the time you're an upperclassman.
Yeah.
So you factor all that in and you say, perfect fit for me?
Definitely. There's just so many positive and good things happening at UC Davis that I'm really excited about. So it's looking forward to a great future.
When you go to the campus, visit the campus, what do you think of the campus?
Gorgeous. Got the Arboretum, this little stream, river, going through the campus, just amazing trees, bunch of bikes. So it's a great area.
You know about picnic days yet?
Oh, yeah. Okay. Yeah, I heard about it, yeah.
I've been to picnic days.
Yeah.
I didn't even go to school there. I've enjoyed picnic days a couple of times. When they talk about upgrading the facilities, I know they're putting a lot of money into it, but what exactly are they doing? Is it locker room,
yeah,
practice field? What are they doing?
Yeah, so they're doing practice, basically the whole nine. So it's the practice field, coaches' offices, family room, weight room, basically everything you could think of in like a real top program facilities. I think it's basically modeled off of like Clemson or something like that, like the design. So it's supposed to be really nice. I'm really excited about it. It should be done by my end of freshman year, end of sophomore year, so... Should be excited.
The end of your redshirt freshman year?
No, my regular,
okay.
Regular freshman year.
Oh, so in 2 years.
Yeah.
Okay. So when you sit with your parents and you talk about this, you have all these, you got the first offers from Nevada. You never forget your first.
Yeah.
Brown as well. And then, St. Francis?
Yeah, St. Francis.
Okay. And then UC Davis, Montana State came in late.
Yeah.
Those are the five, right? Or were there others?
Yeah, that was
right.
Yeah.
So
it was a small D2.
Small D2. Yeah, okay. Thank and Reedley College.
And Reedley College.
I offered you two. And I had my fingers crossed. So when you sit there, you say, Mom, Dad, here's everything that's on the table. Was it pretty easy though to get? It's UC Davis.
Yeah, I mean, I remember Coach Plow came and I was throwing in front of him and I was, I remember he came out and I was like, I love this guy. You know, he's a great guy, a great coach. And I was like, man, this is awesome. And I went down there and I was like, I went down for their junior day and I said, if they offer me, I'm a commit. Like, I love to hear. Like, I remember going down, I was like, I love it. And I was very excited and they didn't because, they only see me throw one time. They're really thorough with the process. So I went back again and then I went back and they offered me when I got back. So like the second trip, I think.
Mm-hmm.
So I was just... really exciting.
Which of their games, of the Central games, do they come watch you play?
They watch Clovis North.
Okay.
Yeah.
Just one game?
Just one. Coach Dan Hawkins game and Coach Hawks. Yeah. It's a good time.
Good time. And then your parents get along with him? Everything's cool?
Oh, yeah. He's a great guy. I had him down for the home visit. He's a great, great guy.
Now, What's the quarterback's name at Davis now? What's his name?
Oh, Jake. Jake Meyer, yeah.
Okay. You're going to learn from him for 1 year. He's going to be a senior. You'll be the redshirt year in 2019. How are you guys – how do you guys get along now initially, and what do you hope to learn from him going forward?
He's a very, very hard worker. He's a, you know, he's a great dude. He loves to get on the field and just work. So we're the same height, so it's a good connection.
6 feet.
Yep.
Okay.
Yes, sir.
Yep.
Yeah. So it's just I feel like we have he's a great dude. So I'm just really excited to learn the offense and kind of get everything going.
Trent Tompkins, UC Davis quarterback, is our guest. You signed pen to paper. Did you do that Wednesday?
Yes. Yes. And then. Today.
And you had your party today at, where were you?
Me and Ed's. Yeah.
Okay.
Great spot.
So you signed it, did you just go, done?
Now
you
can when I signed, I was just, all right.
That's it.
Just, I'm done with recruiting. Felt great.
Now, a lot of people here want to know how much contact Fresno State had with you, if they had contact with you. Obviously, they have Jorge Reyna going forward next year, and they've signed some high school quarterbacks. For their future, but how much contact was there between you and the Bulldogs?
None.
Yeah,
not. I mean, I talked to the player personnel coach a little bit, but about it.
That's it.
Yeah.
So they go their way, you go yours. No hard feelings.
Yep, pretty much.
But did you root for them on Saturday against Arizona State?
A little bit.
Okay,
sure.
The hometown
team. We'll say that. Yeah.
The hometown
team. We'll say that. I was rooting for my guys on the field.
There you go.
All my guys I knew out there. I was rooting for Quick and, you know everybody playing
out
there.
Oh, yeah, of course.
Yeah, my guy, yeah. Just all those guys playing out on the field.
There you go.
Those guys.
There you go. Yeah, that's a good, very, very good answer. So you just go your way, and it's just going to work out for you.
Yep.
What, I haven't seen UC Davis football. So what's their style of offense?
Spread. A lot of NFL concept, just a lot of spread offense. They get down in the center sometimes. It's a great offense. I feel like I can fit really, really well into it. I'm really excited to learn it.
How much help was Coach Biggs in this process for you?
Oh, he's a very good help. You know, he's a great coach. I think he prepared me greatly for college and for the next step. So I give everything to him.
We talked about how, he's a former college quarterback, high school quarterback. Helped you along the way. Did that help you as a player for your seasons with Central?
Yeah, I feel like it did. We're a little two different players.
That's okay.
But, yeah, I think he helped me a lot. He's a great guy, great coach. He knew when to get in me,
push
out to me. Just kind of see how I responded a lot. And I feel like that really helped me for the next level.
Okay, you're done at Central. So I asked Adrian Martinez this 2 weeks ago, when he was a guest. I said, give me an example of a play. I always like to hear a play. So just a typical, a typical pass play. Mm-hmm. I mean, the formation and stuff, when you're in the huddle, you call it. I mean, is it long? Can you give me one?
I feel like our plays, we go signal, so we're not in a huddle. So it's really just get the signal and go. I go up and I'll call the front. So I'll go out and I'll call the front what the front is. Say it's like a four-man even front and say in the rip. So I call rip. So tell them where the linemen are at. Say call the front, then a protection. And then the protection, I tell the routes. So I tell basically the whole offense what to do at the line. And then I kind of go from there, go to my read and get the play going.
And then off you go.
Yep.
How much do you credit your teammates for your success?
Oh, everything goes to Jeremiah, Quali, and all those guys, and Tyrell, and just everybody who had everything. Everybody did something for me. So good. Like, they just were the best teammates I could ask for. My line, my whole line did a great job. And I feel like without those key guys, we weren't going to be in the same spot we are today.
Do you have a moment that stands out in your career at Central that stands out above the rest? You're back-to-back Valley champion.
Yeah.
Season ended not the way you wanted, but you did a lot of accomplishments. Is there one thing that stands out?
I think just winning back-to-back was probably the best. Like, just showed how we really were as a team. I think that first Valley Championship was definitely more memorable than the second one, just because it was the first one ever, so it was just a crazy moment. But, yeah, I'd say the first one was probably the best moment of my life, one of the best.
You got that gigantic Valley Championship ring on. You said this one you're going to get is even bigger?
Oh, yeah, way bigger.
Really?
Yeah,
way bigger? That thing is huge.
Yeah.
Like, what's next year?
I'm going to be honest.
What's this year going to look like?
Oh, man, it's a secret, but it's a lot of diamonds and way bigger than this one.
Wow. Yeah. Well, so much fun to watch you. I said it on Twitter. You're the best quarterback I've ever seen in this valley ever play.
Thank you.
And I've seen Ricky Manning. I've seen Adrian Martinez. There's so many that I've seen. I've seen your head coach, Kyle Biggs, go at it. I've seen Billy Volek. I've seen Derek Carr. I've seen them all, really. But put it all together for you, man. This year for you and your entire career was a joy, man.
Thank you.
And I look forward to seeing you in 2 years because your dad obviously made his commitment to UC Davis with all the brews that they have, right? So he's happy with all that, too.
Yeah.
I can't wait to be in the stands watching him watch you play.
Yeah.
So, last question. This next year, you're not going to play at all, but you're going to learn a lot. Is it going to be kind of a long process because you're not used to standing and watching?
Yeah. Yeah, it's just because it's going to be different. They said they're going to, you know, play me in all four games, so kind of just give you four games for a retro year, so kind of see what games I play in and go from there. It's going to be different, definitely, but I'm excited for everything. I'm just really excited.
Well, we're excited for you. And here at the Fieldhouse, since you finally signed, you can sign this big wall here that we have, celebrating local athletes and their success in sports, high school, college, professional, and Olympic rings. We support dreams that live in our children to achieve their everything. So we'll get you the pen. You can sign it wherever you want on our big wall here.
Yes, sir.
Sounds good. All right, Trent Tompkins, appreciate you. Good luck at UC Davis. And it's going to be a lot of success for you. And look, your parents are here, and the interview's over. All right. Way to go. All right, Todd and Tina. Mom and Dad are awesome.
Yep, thank you.
All right. We take a break. We come back. We'll have the Sports Center, but first we'll talk more about the Bulldogs and their big win. Maybe we'll even have Trent back, too, since his parents showed up. We're live at the Fieldhouse in the Zone, 940 ESPN, the Valley's local sports leader.
You're in the Zone, sponsored by Helena Agra Enterprises, LLC, The Fieldhouse, and Fashion Furniture. Here are George Takata and Nick Anderson.
All right, welcome back, everybody. Before we hit that Sports Center, the whole Tompkins family's here now. They're buying everybody drinks, so come on out. We're very proud parents of their successful son headed to UC Davis. And, you know, it is true. I mean, I am not blowing smoke. I've seen a lot of great high school quarterbacks here, and it started with Ricky Manning at Edison. I was like, oh, man, I don't know if I'll ever see anybody better than that. A two-way player going to go to UCLA, playing defensive back, throwing a pill like that. Man. And then, you know, other guys come along down the road that have been really successful at the quarterback position. I mentioned Adrian Martinez. Wow, he's just sensational. Runs fast. Throws the ball, very athletic, you know, great. But I hadn't seen, but the best was still yet to come with Trent. And just the leadership, the intangibles, the arm, the elusiveness, the ability to run, create plays on your feet, and the stats. My God, 5,001 yards and 65 touchdowns in the air. 1,001 yards and 7 touchdowns on the ground. That is 6,002 yards of total offense to go along with 72 touchdowns in 14 games. Find me anybody who did it better. And won back-to-back Valley Championships. Find me anybody else who did it better. I can't find it. I can't find it. To me, Trent is numero uno, and he's going to light it up with Dan Hawkins at UC Davis. He is going to light it up. It's going to be a lot of fun to watch, that is for sure. Hey, Bulldog basketball looks strong. I'm telling you, if you want to watch a great basketball team, it's right at the St. Mark's Center. There's no doubt. You could this team dismantled Cal. Now, I know Cal, not the strongest of teams these days, right? But they got blitzed by a Fresno State team that is without its best player right now. They put up 95 on Cal Wednesday night. Just impressive. I mean, kudos to Justin Hudson and his staff for doing what they are doing. They had 6 guys in double figures. New Williams had 19. Braxton Huggins had 18. You know, New was 11 of 14 from the free throw line. these guys are getting at it. It's up tempo. It's fun to watch. Taylor will be back soon. And there's my plug. They play again tomorrow. Come on out and support your Fresno State men's basketball team, because they are the real deal. Tennessee Martin tomorrow at 4. Go on out and watch them improve to 9-2 possibly on the campaign. All right, you're going to hit the Sports Center. Hour number 2, Mario Gomez, formerly the Bark Board. Former Fresno State quarterback Tom Brandstater. We're talking all things Bulldogs when we come back. In the Zone, live from the Fieldhouse, packed on a Friday on a holiday weekend. 940 ESPN, the Valley's local sports leader.
Time to get in the zone.
Oh, my God! The most amazing, sensational, dramatic, heart-rending, exciting, thrilling finish in the history of college football.
Down goes Frazier! Down goes Frazier!
5 seconds left in the game. Over. You believe in miracles? Oh, yes!
The Zone is sponsored by Helena Agro Enterprises, The Fieldhouse, and Fashion Furniture.
Swung on, hit the deep center field. Bernie Williams goes back and in.
It's Friday. It's the Fieldhouse, and you're in the Zone. Here are your hosts, George Takata.
You talking to me?
And Nick Anderson.
You talking to me?
It's time to get in the zone.
What are you worried about? I'm in the zone, man.
All right, everybody, welcome. This is hour number 2 of the Zone, live from the Fieldhouse in Fresno, off of Copper. The holiday weekend is picking up steam here. Holiday week for a lot of people. No, teachers are off. I'm off from Reedley College for a week. You know, the beautiful world of education. I love not working Christmas week and New Year's. It's still very foreign to me. Have a great show planned for hour number 2. Mario Gomez, formerly of the Bark Board, one of the originators, one of the founders of the Bark Board, will join us to talk about this Fresno State football season, as well as former Fresno State quarterback Tom Brandstater. We'll talk about how happy he is as an alum and actually analyzing Marcus McMarion and what he thinks of his future as a pro. Lots going on. Lots to talk about. All right, so kicking off this hour number 2, we see that the Raiders, who knows where they're going to play next year. 2019 is up in the air. We're seeing now my good friend Raj Mathai, who we've had on this program before, the main anchor, news anchor at NBC Bay Area, San Francisco, actually based in San Jose, says that the Raiders have had some talks with the Giants, San Francisco Giants, about playing at AT&T Park for 2019, because the situation with the Raiders in the city of Oakland, it seems like they're on their way to an early divorce. That they will not play there in 2019, just this lawsuit by the city of Oakland. Mark Bedain, the Raiders president, we've heard numerous things being said by the Bedain and the Raiders. Hey, they follow through on this thing. We're not playing there next year. We got plenty of options to play somewhere else in 2019, which includes possibly Sam Boyd Stadium in Las Vegas, maybe in Reno. I've heard that they're not going to be able to play in San Diego, that the league will block the Raiders from going to play in San Diego or San Antonio. Derek Carr's made a plug to play 2019 at Bulldog Stadium at the Fresno Raiders. Can you imagine if they won a Super Bowl in Fresno? I heard that. Derek Carr said that during the broadcast of the Bengals-Raiders game on Sunday, that the announcer said that Derek Carr is making his pitch. Let's play our 7 home games, because they're going to play one in Mexico City,
let's play our 7 regular season games and our 2 preseason games. Let's play 9 games in Fresno. And can you imagine the Raiders helping fund some of the Bulldog Stadium renovations? Can you imagine changing the turf out a little bit? One silver and black checkerboard end zone, one red and white checkerboard end zone. Picture, if you will, the 50-yard line with the Bulldog logo to the face. Half Bulldog, half Raider Pirate. Oh, sign me up, baby. Sign me up for that. Can you imagine? Just picture the Raider Pirate, half of his face, with the Bulldog logo. Oh, electric. I love it. All that excitement is probably not even going to happen. But the San Francisco Raiders, essentially, and the Santa Clara 49ers, essentially, is what it is. I have no idea where the Raiders are going to end up. I hope that they could stay in Oakland for that fan base. Yeah, half them, or that, or the Bulldog face with the pirate eye patch and the Raider swords in the background. That should be the 50-yard line at Bulldog Stadium if the Raiders play there. That's it. That's exactly what it should be. I love it. That's beautiful. But for the sake of Raider fans, Oakland Raider fans that live in Oakland, one more year in Oakland. I mean, come on. Get it worked out, but the politics and the bickering and the back and forth and the lawsuits, probably not going to happen, right? So why not come to Fresno for a season? Why not? Oh, see, yep. Or you do the Raider dogs. You have the Bulldog face with the pirate eye patch, and instead of swords, you have bones. Dog bones. See, our crack staff is hard at work providing these images to me while I speak. I think it's great. If you play in Fresno, you have a great Raider fan base in Fresno, Central Valley, basically. You do. Knights of the Shield chapter here and all that great stuff. I've done rallies for them, and it's been fun. You're 2.5 hours from Oakland, so fans from Oakland come to Fresno. The stadium is 43,000 people, basically. Seats 43,000. I think it would sell out all the time. You got Derek Carr coming back to playing in Bulldog Stadium. That storyline speaks for itself. And you don't have to play in Sam Boyd Stadium. Not bad, but it's all bench seating, I think. At least you have some nice, comfortable seats to sit in at Bulldog Stadium. The side, over on the side, though, are bench seats at Fresno State. In the middle, either side of the 50, the red seats, obviously, are the more comfortable ones. You got suites at Bulldog Stadium, and you have the Raiders help pay for some of the renovations. And it just all works out. Fresno's just great. You know, Sacramento would be a great spot if they had a football stadium to play in. But they're not going to go play at Hornet Stadium. They're not going to play at UC Davis. It's not suitable for an NFL team, at least not yet, until UC Davis renovates everything. The Fresno Raiders. It would just be weird to have the Raiders in the Bay Area still, but not in Oakland, have the Coliseum just completely empty while they're playing in San Francisco where the Giants play. And they'd still have to play on dirt at the beginning of the year because they'd have to share the field with the Giants. Still dirt and grass, just a different place in a much nicer stadium. I saw the tweet a couple weeks ago after the Raiders beat the Steelers that there was like a maintenance guy saying that there were rats in the soda machine at the Coliseum. And God bless Derek Carr in his press conference this week. Saying that's our home. You know, people make fun of it. It's old, and they make fun of the sewage and the pipes and all that stuff. It's still home to me. Yeah, but there are rats in the Coke machine, Derek. It's time to leave, okay? And when I was in Vegas, I made a point to drive by that new stadium that they're building for them. There won't be any rats in the sewage in that place. That thing is going to be gorgeous. And teams, franchises like the Raiders, who... where their owner is, his primary income is from the Raiders. He doesn't come from any other source of income. That's the Raiders are his cash cow, so to speak. It's not Jerry Jones who came from oil and all these Dan Snyders who came from different successful businesses to buy teams. This is Mark Davis. This is his baby. And so to get a state-of-the-art stadium that will have a Raiders Hall of Fame and an all-grass field that they'll roll in and out under a dome stadium, a retractable stadium, I think it is. Everything brand new for the Raiders. I mean, it's going to be beautiful. But the tradition doesn't exactly move with it. You know, you still have the memories of the great legends that played in the Coliseum. And this could be the last game in Oakland on Monday night against the Denver Broncos, in which will be very emotional. It's been emotional for John Gruden. It's been emotional for Raider Nation to even think about it, including myself. And so Monday night against Denver could be the last game in Oakland. It'd be a very, very sad situation if that indeed would be the case. So we're not going to really know, I think, until the end of January if the Raiders are indeed going to leave. They have to have a decision made by the end of January, I think it is, to the league. Where are you going to play? We need to, you know, make a schedule here. But if Monday night is the last game in Oakland for the Oakland Raiders ever, it'll be a couple tears. It'll be a couple tears shed by me, I'm not going to lie. And I have tickets to that game, so I don't, Christmas Eve, possible last game in Oakland, might have to go. I think that's something I'd have to do. Cry with everybody else. Cry with Darth Raider and the, what's his name, the Annihilator or whatever that guy is. What's that? The Gorilla. You know, he wears shades, so we wouldn't be seeing him cry. But even John Gruden, I think he would shed a tear. It's just the possibility of it. I remember when the Kings almost left Sacramento. That was some sad stuff, too, and they ended up saving the team there. But Oakland Raiders, it's not going to exist much longer. Monday might be the end of it, or maybe 2019 might be the end of it, but the end is near either way. Even in Derek Carr's press conference this week, they asked him about Fresno State. Is this the best team in Fresno State history, the 2018 Bulldogs? Derek laughed and said, you know, jokingly, this is not going to happen, but he said, you know, at the end of the year, we'll meet up with that team at Bulldog Stadium and we'll go at it, and I like my team's chances. Could you imagine Derek Carr to Devontae Adams trying to, you know, score against Jeffrey Allison and Mike Bell and Tank Kelly and George Helmuth and those guys? That'd be a lot of fun. But really, do you take Derek Carr to lose against the Marcus McMarion Bulldogs? I don't know. The defense this year is better than what Derek had, I think. But I think the offense with Derek, Devontae, Josh Harper, Isaiah Burrish, Robbie Rouse is better than the Marcus McMarion team. So, well, that's fun to think about. Maybe it just ends in a 28-28 tie or something like that. Who knows? But I still think Marcus McMarion and Ronnie Rivers and Keyshawn Johnson, those guys, will be able to move the ball against the Bulldog defense, the Derek Carr team's defenses. And I think Derek would have a tougher time moving the ball up against this version of the Fresno State defense. It's just Burt Watts is just an incredible defensive coordinator. The things he has done to continue the defensive excellence with Fresno State is very, very impressive. And so we've debated this off the air since the bowl game ended. Like, is this the best Fresno State football team ever? 12-2, conference champs, bowl game champs. We'll finish ranked in the top 20 for sure. Maybe the top 15. Almost had a shot at the Fiesta Bowl. We will discuss all that with the founder, I guess you could say, of the Bark Board. He's Mario Gomez. He will join us in a little bit when we return live from the Fieldhouse in the Zone on 940 ESPN, the Valley's local sports leader.
You're in the Zone, sponsored by Helena Agra Enterprises, LLC, The Fieldhouse, and Fashion Furniture. Here are George Takata and Nick Anderson.
All All right, welcome back, everybody. My next guest here in the zone, live from the Fieldhouse. Oh, by the way, I haven't had any of these yet, but the drink here, the special, is the 940. It's a $5 strawberry whiskey sour. It is delicious. We've had some patrons here buy it, which is we appreciate that. I'm going to have a couple of them at least when the show's over. And then I'm going to Uber home. It'll be great. All right, we're just going to talk more Fresno State football. We've had this discussion. 2018, is this the best team in Fresno State football history? I have someone on the line who's got so much knowledge on Bulldog football, it's not even funny. It's like the Rain Man of information. It's Mario Gomez. I started the whole bark board craze, and he joins me live on the phone because traffic is a you-know-what at 519 on a Friday. Mario, how you doing, man?
I'm doing well, George. How you doing?
I'm doing great. Thanks for joining me. Now, let's talk a little bit about this Fresno State team. You and I went to the bowl game. We had a great time. But when you talk about the historical references to it, you talk about the team that went 11-0-1 in 85, the David Carr team that was ranked as high as eighth in the nation but didn't win championship or bowl game, these Derek Carr teams. But where would you rank this 2018 team? Is this the best one ever or no?
As far as, like, the season goes, I think you have to, like, put it 1A and 1B with the 85 team because both teams accomplished two things that haven't been done, you know, in the modern football area under in Fresno State history, which is, when I say modern, I mean when Division I split to 1A and 1AA in the late 70s. And the 85 team, of course, was undefeated, 11-0-1. They had that tie to Hawaii, but they were only unbeaten team in the country that year, finished 16th in the country, got one first-place vote from Barry Switzer of Oklahoma. And then, of course, this team in 2018 went 12-2, first team to win 12 games, won a bowl game, and it's probably going to finish with a higher ranking. It may finish maybe at 16 or 17, but there's a good chance they'll finish probably somewhere, you know, around between 14 and 17. And if they can get a higher ranking, it might go down probably better than that 85 team.
Well, what you see in this defense specifically, led by their great coordinator, Burt Watts, with the pick six we saw by Tank Kelly, you know, the greatness in the secondary, of course, Jeffrey Allison, George Hellmuth, and the linebacking core, sensational. The front really stuffed Arizona State in the second half. They had virtually no offensive production in the second half. Where would you rank the defense specifically in regards to all these other great Fresno State teams?
It's probably going to go down. I would say probably the best defense, just the competition they played. Mm-hmm. The 87 defense, you know, the one led by Jethro Franklin, and he had a freshman linebacker on the name of Ron Cox who went on to play for the Bears. But that defense didn't have an offense to really help, and they only went 6-5 that year. But that defense was is infamous for sacking Troy Aikman 12 times versus UCLA in the Rose Bowl, and they lost 17-0 because the offense couldn't get any points. But this defense, though, I think they just played a much better schedule. They played Boise State twice. You got Arizona State. San Diego State, even though they kind of tanked into the year, is still a quality team. Minnesota finished 6-6. And even though UCLA didn't have the best record, it's still a Pac-12 opponent. And they held every one of those teams under 30 points. And I think when you look at that, this defense is going to be hard to top going forward. And still, they got that streak. I think it's 25 in a row of keeping opponents under 30 points, which is tops in the country.
N'Keal Harry or not, even if the Sun Devils had N'Keal Harry, you still think Fresno State wins this game?
I think you have to look in that first half, take away Tank Kelly's interception. Arizona State was in scoring position every single drive. They did go right. 3-and-out in the first possession, but it could have been easily 28-3, and that defense didn't allow that. They kind of bent it a little bit, but they didn't break. I think maybe if they get one more touchdown with Harry, that could have made things a little bit closer. But in the second half, they really shut down Benjamin, and I think without the run game, I think they could have really presence anywhere in that offense. So I think the defense played well enough that even with Harry, it might have been a little closer. But as we saw, Fresno State was about to score again when they when the clock in and the clock struck zeros. So I think in the second half, especially that fourth quarter, the offense is getting things going, and they still probably would have prevailed.
Now, I saw you were on Twitter. What was it, Sunday morning? We were at the hotel getting breakfast. You were trying to rank all these Fresno State teams. What did you end up coming up with?
The 80, you know, because we still haven't seen where this team is going to finish ranked at the end
True.
Of the year. And I think if they finish ranked higher than 16, I think they'd probably have to put them number one. And then, of course, 85 would be number two. But right now, I think 85 with a higher ranking, it's like 1A and 1B. Behind them, I was looking at teams that won a conference title and then won the bowl game. The 82 team, when Kasper was the starting quarterback, they didn't finish anywhere near ranked. They lost, I think, Nevada Reno that year, but they beat Bowling Green, and they won a conference title, finished 11-1. That's a nice accomplishment. The 89 team, while it went 11-1, and won a conference title, they tanked against New Mexico in the final season game. They got pretty spanked pretty hard. That kind of knocked them down a little bit. But those three teams are teams that finished with at least 11 wins and finished with a conference title and won their bowl game. But when you look a little deeper as far as teams that finished in the top 25, the 92 team with Trent Dilfer, they won a share of the WAC title. They beat USC in the bowl game and finished number 24 in the country. The 2013 team, they didn't finish ranked, but they did win a conference title. But, you know, they lost to USC in that bowl game. I think that's the one team, even though they didn't have a defense, if they would have just beat San Jose State, of course, that would probably have the best season. But when you finish the season with two losses like that, it puts it behind. So the 85, the 2018, the 82, those are probably the three best teams that, you know, probably as far as getting 11 wins and winning the conference title and getting a bowl game.
Mario Gomez is our guest. Now, I talked to you, when I describe you, I've said you've like the founder of the Barkboard. So, I mean, is that accurate, or how would I describe your and the connection you have to the Barkboard? Jackson does a great job with it now.
Yeah, Jackson was my intern. I hired Jackson right out of Clovis High School when he was 18 years old, and look what he's become. He's taken the board to new levels. I'd probably say the founder of the modern era, because the Barkboard originally started in the 90s as like an email newsletter and had a message board in 2001. Now it was started by my buddy Jerry McEwen. You know, Jerry's gone on the air with Tony Diodato, and then after Jerry stopped, I started going on the air with Tony D, and then that's what elevated the board to get to where it's at. You know, Coach Hill, you know, you wish him a happy birthday last week, and I jumped on board and gave him a happy birthday, because if it wasn't for Coach Hill, the Barkboard wouldn't be where it is today. Because in 2005, 2006, social media was barely kind of taken off, and as far as message boards and having that kind of identity, that kind of media coverage, it was, you know, public information directors didn't like sites like Barkboard.com. They didn't like USCFootball.com. You know, they didn't like these sites that covered college sports. And especially in Fresno, it was tough, but Coach Hill was welcoming. He pretty much knew. I was like, you know, I'm going to be talking about him on the air with Tony D. I'm going to be covering recruiting. I'm going to be watching practice as much as I can. So, you know, he allowed Barkboard.com to watch practice, cover the team, and get a media credential. And that's pretty much what really solidified as being a known entity in the media world, is getting a media credential and being able to cover the team for the press box.
That, he was ahead of his time in regards to all that. And now everybody's got a board. I mean, everybody's got everything. You know, every school's got a recruiting board and, you know, memberships and, you know, inside information. It's crazy how everything has advanced now. Fresno State just had the early signing period. All the schools did. How would you grade their incoming recruiting class during the early signing period, I guess, headlined by Jalen Cropper?
I think just mentioning Jalen Cropper alone to like diminish anyone else in that class, but you just have to look going back and you follow Fresno State football. You know, Coach Sweeney, you go back that far, you know, was kind of ridiculed per se, not able to land the Tim McDonald's of the world. Of course, Tim McDonald was never going to go to Fresno State, but and not going to put Jalen Cropper in that class. That's such huge shoes to follow. But Tim McDonald, when he went to Edison and he was an All-American and goes to USC, those type of players Fresno fans always wanted to stay home. And yep. Jalen Cropper is like that type of recruit. He's a player that was on the national radar recruiting team when he was a sophomore, and he knew he was going to be a big-time player, whether he was going to end up in the Pac-12 or go to the Big 12 like some of these other kids from the Valley. He was going to go somewhere big. And the fact for him to stay home and want to play in front of his family and his friends and kind of really be a part of what Coach Tedford is doing at Fresno State stems from what Coach Sweeney tried to do in the 80s and what Coach Hill was doing. You know, Coach Hill was able to land a few of the guys, but, you know, the Jalen Crawfords are those guys that he still was unable to get and may never unable to get. You know, Derek Carr, Travis Brown, they were four-star recruits, but they had obvious ties to the program, obvious ties to the community. And Jalen, he didn't have those ties to the program. Mm-hmm. And I think Tedford, what he's doing here, sold him. And I think he could see, like, to do what he wants to do at the next level, he could do it at Fresno State. And with the way the receiving corps is shaking out, he could do it as a true freshman. And he could be a type of guy. You know, we saw Rondell Moore at Purdue become an All-American his first year by getting so many touches. With Keyshawn Johnson gone, that's like 100-plus targets that they got to distribute out to a bunch of freshmen and sophomores. You know, Darren Grimm's the only returning receiver with significant experience. So don't be surprised Jalen Cropper comes in and has a type of season as a true freshman that we know. We saw Jalen Saunders in 2010 have a season where he got 1,000 yards as a true freshman. Devontae Adams was a redshirt freshman. But those are the type of guys that were able to play right off the bat. And Jalen definitely fits that mold. And he's a Valley guy. And a Valley guy that could have went anywhere he wanted to go, but he's staying home.
Last thought, next season, 2019, the Bulldogs open at USC August 31st in the Coliseum. The Bulldogs, I don't know if they'll be the favorite or not, but I think it'll be the line will be pretty even. I don't know. Jorge Reyna's probably going to be the new quarterback. The Bulldogs have had back-to-back double-digit win seasons, first time ever in school history. When you look at next year's schedule, they don't have Boise State on it. They do host Utah State, Colorado State. Minnesota's coming in here. Do you see another 10-plus win season for the Bulldogs? I know it all hinges on an unproven quarterback, but what are your thoughts on that?
You look on paper, you probably it's hard to pencil in more than, like, two losses. And when you say two losses, it's like, you know, in 2017, that loss to UNLV probably shouldn't have happened. They just had one of those games where they just didn't play well. And this past season, Minnesota's probably that game where they didn't play well. But Minnesota turned out to be a pretty decent team. And so if you look at next year, USC's the toughest game on the schedule. And to ask a quarterback like Reyna to come in his first game to go on the road and win in the Coliseum. And USC, to say that team is going to be down, they're going to get Cliff Kingsbury in an offensive coordinator, and they still have talent. You know, this recruiting class, they're getting a lot of kind of looks of not having the typical USC recruiting class of five stars. It's ranked like 21 in the country, but the talent returned, and this team still played Notre Dame tough and probably should have beat Notre Dame, who's playing in the College Football Playoff, and most of those guys returned. You know, George, we saw JT Daniels up close. You interviewed him when he was a eighth grader playing a passing down,
yeah.
And now he's going to be a returning sophomore quarterback for USC, and he has talent, and he has receivers, he has running backs, and if they make some tweaks, this team has talent. So if Fresno State went in there and somehow just, you know, had a game where they weren't playing their A game, and they kind of fell behind, and USC just went ahead and won that game, and for Fresno State to say that the season's not going to be over, because their goal is to win the Mountain West, and they could bounce back and still get, I think, you know, easily get 10 wins. But, you know, if they beat USC, the expectations are going to be huge. And it'll be very, very tough, you know, to kind of to exceed what they did this last year. But next year, you know, where is it to go? If you beat USC, it's like everyone's going to expect an undefeated season. And that's tough for any team to do. And, you know, no Fresno State team has done it since 85. And even that team had a tie.
Well, it's all exciting stuff when you have come off a season like this, so much success, all the talk, all the buzz is just going to just steamroll and snowball into something that we hope is really big starting in
August 31st against USC at the Coliseum. Hey, Mario, thanks for the time. Merry Christmas to you. And can't wait for passing down in February, man. Looking forward to the circuit.
All right, George, thanks for having me on.
You got it. Mario Gomez started this whole barkboard thing with the help of Coach Hill. And great to have his insight. Knows his stuff about Bulldog football, I'll tell you that. And to be determined. See what the rankings come up with. See where Mario would put those 2018 Bulldogs in regards to that 11-0-1 1985 team. All right, we got to take a break. Tom Brandstetter, former Bulldog quarterback, very proud Bulldog quarterback. He's a bowl game winner, too. He will join us to talk about his thoughts on the big Vegas Bowl win over Arizona State. We are live in the zone from the Fieldhouse, 940 ESPN, the Valley's local sports leader.
You're in the zone. Sponsored by Helena Agri Enterprises, LLC, The Fieldhouse, and Fashion Furniture. Here are George Takata and Nick Anderson.
All right, welcome back, everybody. We are wrapping up the zone here, live from the Fieldhouse. Joining me live, I don't know where Tom is right now. I think he lives in Tennessee or something like that. He's joining me live from wherever he lives. Former Fresno State quarterback Tom Brandstetter. Hey, Tom, how you doing? Where are you, by the way?
George, I am in Nashville, Tennessee.
Yeah, that's
leaving,
right.
Leaving the mall to see Santa. My two little girls want to see Santa, so I'm in the car driving. Forgive me.
Okay. Oh, hey, no problem. Do you go to any Titans games, I guess I should ask?
I do, yeah. That's like the hometown team now, so I've got it's across the street from my office downtown Nashville. So we go to a couple games a year for sure.
Okay. What are you doing now? We could start off with that. Where is your life taking? Are you married, two beautiful girls, and what are you doing job wise?
Yeah, exactly. So I'm married to a girl from Alabama, so that's kind of part of the reason I live in Tennessee. I'm a financial advisor for Wells Fargo Advisors. And I got two young girls, 21 months and 4 months. You might hear one of them screaming in the back.
Oh, fantastic. Yeah, Christmas in Turlock, or are you staying in Nashville?
You know, I was actually in California yesterday, but still most of my clientele is in the Valley. So I spend 1 week every month in the Valley, mostly Turlock and Modesto. But, yeah, so I just got back yesterday, and I'm going to spend the holidays in Tennessee.
All right. Well, fantastic. I appreciate the time. I know you're busy being a dad and all that, but – you know, talking about Fresno State football and the season that they had, the accomplishments, watching that bowl game, watching them beat Arizona State like that. What were your thoughts on the season in general? I know you went to the UCLA game. I saw you there. Watching this team all season long, what impressed you the most?
You know, they had a heck of a season. Obviously, you know, what Tedford has been able to do, you know, pretty quickly is remarkable. I watched the Minnesota game. That was one that kind of stung. And looking back now, you know, a win like that would have been pretty key. But you have to tip your hat to a coach that came in there and, you know, with a losing season the time before, and then now is turning around and, you know, losing only two games this year is pretty remarkable and fun to watch, and, you know, makes me proud. It's interesting that, you know, I travel quite often for my job, and a lot of people, you know, we talk about Fresno State football, and it's pretty cool to know that we're on a national stage. People know, you know, who we are, what we're about, and it's proud for me to see us doing so well again.
Let's go back to that championship game against Boise State when Ronnie Rivers takes it in the snow. Were you as loud as every other Fresno State fan when that happened?
I was. Yes, I was actually at a restaurant in Nashville having dinner with some friends, and there was a bunch of other games going on. I kept having to, like, fight the waitress to turn the Fresno State game back on because there was a couple other games happening. So I got to see it live and see it, you know, see that touchdown. And it was such a cool feeling to, you know, there's obviously been a lot of history, not good history for Fresno State fans, you know, on that field against that team. So it was cool to kind of come full circle and see us kind of do what we haven't done in a long time and, you know, see the emotion of those kids to, you know, it just means a lot to a lot of people at Fresno State. And you can see the same passion for the guys that actually got the win, you know, there in Boise.
What's it like when you're watching the game? I know you have a lot of great teammates that I'm pretty sure that you're in contact with every now and then. Are you exchanging texts with your teammates during the game or when you're watching stuff like that happen, or you're just kind of watching it with your family?
Yeah, it's a little of both. I mean, when there's certain things that happen that kind of, you know, reminiscent of, you know, whatever, you know, when Jared Rice has, you know, kind of taken over the tight end role, I sent a couple messages to Bear, and, you know, kind of just joked around about how, you know, how good Jared's been able to be. You know, Bear was such a great tight end, and to see him, you know, break those records was kind of fun. In fact, Jared's father is a client of mine. They're a Turlock family, so I know that family really well, and it's cool to see him have such good success.
Now, correct me if I'm wrong. Now, you won on the blue turf in the Humanitarian Bowl, correct?
I did, yes. Who did we beat?
Georgia Tech,
won there,
right?
Twice. Won my freshman year. Yes, we beat Georgia Tech there my junior year in the Humanitarian Bowl. And then we beat Virginia when I was a freshman and didn't play. But so those that we won there, just we never won there beating Boise until this year, obviously.
As a player, the media hypes up this blue turf thing. Did you guys hate hearing that? It's just a turf. It's just a different color. Yeah. It's no big deal, right?
It's funny, yeah. I mean, really, it is shocking that when you know, obviously, if you were just to people ask me this question all the time because there's not, you know, that's people know that rivalry, know that blue turf, and the truth is, if you were just to, you know, the game's at 7 or let's say 3 o'clock in the afternoon, and it's light outside. If you just like dropped yourself on the field at a minute before kickoff, it would truly take you, you know, a quarter, and it would be an advantage for the Boise team. But once you're there and you kind of get acclimated, it really does. As much as I want to make excuses for us not ever winning there against, you know, Boise, it doesn't really matter, and the team doesn't blend in with the with the turf. But definitely, I guess it makes me feel better. Maybe that was some of the reason why we could never beat them there. Me
Tom
personally,
Brandt.
At least.
Tom Brandstetter is our guest. What is your biggest memory over that win over Georgia Tech in the Humanitarian Bowl?
Well, actually, I had like my longest touchdown run ever. So I think I still remember, like, you know, wondering. The run was like, I don't know, like 40 yards, which for my career, there was not too many 40-yard touchdown runs. So that was probably a highlight just because I never got to do – that was not really my MO. So that was a pretty solid memory. And we played pretty well. We beat a good team. And any time to beat one of those major programs in a bowl game was obviously a accomplishment for us.
What are your thoughts on Marcus McMarion, watching him play?
I'll tell you what, I mean, he's such a good player. Obviously, the UCLA game, you know, he played well. I think I forget how many touchdowns he had running, but he had a couple of them. You know, he's just done a really good job. He leads that offense well. You know, I'm not sure who the OC is, but they definitely feel like you've got an advantage, you know, watching our team play against whoever we're playing against. The offense can score points, and he runs it, you know, pretty effectively.
How impressed are you with the job Jeff Tedford and his staff have done in 2 years, taking a group of guys who lost 11 games and turning them into a conference champion, two-time bowl game champion, and a 12-win team?
Yeah, I mean, you can't say enough about what he's able to do. You know, obviously, you know, being with Pat Hill for so long, I kind of got used to, you know, not very much turnover. I got to know DeRuiter a little bit, and then when Tedford got hired, you know, I knew he was a dog, but I didn't know him from Adam. And so actually, I remember I went and, just walked in the building and said, hey, I'd like to just meet Coach. And, you know, just, I didn't know what to expect. Didn't know if he would, you know, not have time for the conversation. And he was so gracious. He actually gave me an hour of his time, kind of laid out his plan for the program. And I went from having, you know, a lot of question marks, you know, what is this going to be, you know, going forward, to just feeling like, man, this guy understands, you know, what it is to be. So Coach Hill had this expectation of, you know, being a Bulldog was different than just simply going to college at Fresno State. There was a different level of something that was the it factor. And Tedford, you know, from day one kind of, you know, showed me this is our vision. You know, I'm trying to build something here, not just, you know, take a job for a year or two. And so it got me fired up, and you know, he's been just so, and obviously he's won and showed that his vision has paid off. So, you know, for ex-Dawgs, every guy I talked to, we're pretty fired up. And I guess now it's more a matter of keeping him there and letting him do his thing for, you know, a lot longer than just 2 years.
Yeah, that's the thing, right? You have great success, and then that equals all the bigger schools coming, calling your cell phone up and blowing it up. But I think Jeff's here for the long haul. Hopefully that's the case anyway. You have a great story, interesting story anyway, in regards to Josh Allen. Can you share that with us a little bit?
Yeah, we were joking before. Yeah, so Josh, I forget how many years ago that it was, but somebody had called me about this kid, and I think it was Fireball, right, or one of the towns,
yeah,
you know, kind of not the big ones, and said, you got to see this kid play, and you know, he really wants to, you know, play at Fresno State. He watched you play and would love to just have a chance to get in the door. And I remember sort of like, you know, seeing his tape, and obviously he was a, you know, heck of a high school player. And it was just through the transition period. I think it was either Coach Hill had just left, and I didn't really know much of the staff, yeah. And so I didn't really know who to talk to, or I couldn't vouch for the kid. I didn't know how to really judge high school players, and you know, unfortunately, he never got the chance to go to Fresno. He went on to Reedley, and now the rest is history. And you know, I've talked to him a couple times about his path, and you know, just watching him now on Sundays, the guy is, you know, I think probably the best rookie quarterback in this year's draft, just because he has. He's you know, the more he plays, you can tell that he's got a lot of the it factor for an NFL player. So, you know, it's a shame for Fresno that we never had him, but it might be, you know, who knows, right? We probably would never have Tedford if Josh Allen goes to Fresno State and you know, does what he did at Wyoming.
Well, you know what they say, it all happens the way it's supposed to happen, and you know, really great that Josh is doing well. I'm glad that he was at Reedley College for one season, then the success he's having now, and of course, having Jeff and with Marcus McGrain and the great two-year run that those two had together was simply awesome. Hey, Tom, Merry Christmas to you and the family. I know you got your hands full with the kids, so we'll let you go, but I do appreciate your time as always. It's always great to reconnect with you, man. Will we see you at the USC game August 31st?
You know what? Yeah, I'm circling it right now. I usually have to plan my life one week at a time, but I will definitely, any chance I get to go to L.A. And watch the dog somewhere, I'll be there. So definitely circle me down there, and I'll see you guys in a couple months.
All right, sounds great. Hey, Tom, thank you so much, man. I appreciate it. Happy holidays.
George, thank you so much.
You got it. Former Fresno State quarterback Tom Brandstater joining us. Impressed with Marcus McMarion. How can you not be? All right, take a break. Final segment coming up in the zone, live from the Fieldhouse on Copper in Fresno. Come on out. Got a lot of great food and drink here. 940 ESPN, the Valley's local sports leader.
You're in the zone. Sponsored by Helena Agri Enterprises, LLC, The Fieldhouse, and Fashion Furniture. Here are George Takata and Nick Anderson.
All right, we got five more minutes here on this big program. In advance, thanks to our guests, Pat Ware, Trent Tompkins, Mario Gomez, Tom Brandstater. We wrap this up with Todd Tompkins. Why? I don't know. But not because he's Trent's dad, a proud parent, and all that stuff. But back in the day, you were a champion in your own right, right? Go ahead.
I was before I was known as Trent's dad.
Yeah.
Yeah. No. Younger, world champion BMX racer.
There you go.
Yep.
How old were you?
Yep. I was. Let's see. Seven.
Seven. 7 years old, winning a national championship.
That's right. Had a bike named after me. They sold it in stores. That's my claim to fame. And then I went on to play college basketball at Fresno Pacific.
There you go. Awesome. See? So we have athletes on all the time. And now, this business that I didn't even know you had, just tell us about this drink truck that you have.
Absolutely. I mean, yeah, that's the Cliff Note version right there. Tap Truck Sin Cow. I'll do my little ad right now. Check that. It's Tap Truck Sin Cow, C-E-N-C-A-L.
Yep.
We do, myself, Tim McConico, co-owner. We do weddings, corporate events. We have a 53 Chevy panel, which was my father's, before he passed away, willed it to me, and it's got five taps on the side of it. And we find the beer for you, whatever you want. We do wine, sangria, kombucha, root beer. We even go, they keg sodas. So if it's a school event, we can do orange soda, root beer, all those good things. Root beer floats, you name it. Doing a lot of weddings right now, a lot of corporate events going on.
So we can have it on campus for Reedley, when Reedley College, when we host Fresno City College. We have the Ortega's taco truck and then you guys right next to serving the non-alcoholic stuff.
100%. And we enjoy being next to taco trucks too.
Of course, you guys exchange business cards and food items.
Trade out, absolutely.
Now, how long have you had this business?
About 3 months now. We have the rights from Madera to pretty much the Grapevine. We've been using the San Diego truck. Mine comes in next week. We're getting it all dialed in and And I officially get my father's truck back next week, so I'm pretty fired up for that.
Now you have two different trucks?
We do. We're sending one back to San Diego. Mm-hmm. I'll have my main one, and then the wedding season's going to start picking up in the spring, and so we're probably going to be back to two trucks by then.
Okay, and what's the website or what's the?
Tap Truck SinCal. It's Instagram.
There it is.
Yes, Mario's got it right here. It's Instagram, Facebook, website. The website will send you to the main one in San Diego, and then you can navigate to us.
How's the response been so far?
It's been awesome. I mean, anytime you have a classic vehicle just spewing liquid gold out of the side of it, you can't go wrong.
And it's
man.
Not a gas leak, folks.
No.
It's beer.
No. and we serve it for you. So you sit back, enjoy, check out the ride, and enjoy it.
How proud are you of your son?
You know, words can't really place that. I mean, it's been, I don't know, we make the joke it's an investment, right? Mm-hmm. But in reality, it's just what we did. I didn't know he's going to be a football player. I mean, he loves sports, so we've been playing sports and racing motorcycles since he was, you know, 4 or 5 years old. It's just what we do. It's a family thing. We all go out. For him to get to this point, it's nothing that I did, nothing that Tina did. He's wanted this. He's worked his tail off for it. And, you know, we're proud that he's achieving his dream.
He's not playing baseball or anything, right?
You know what? I didn't think he was.
Oh, he's going to?
But he came home yesterday talking about it. And we absolutely encourage. You know, I always said, you do everything you can until they tell you you can't.
There you go. Well, congratulations. You did a great job raising your son and your daughter, both you and Tina. Now, Trent, after the show, is going to sign our wall here, now that he's officially signed with UC Davis. Thanks to all of our guests. Happy holidays to you. And
thank you, George. I appreciate
it, man. Rest of Tompkins Plan, Todd, and we'll get that truck at Reilly College.
There we go.
Thanks to all our guests. Hey, Merry Christmas. We will be back next Friday here at the Fieldhouse on The Zone, 940 ESPN, the Valley's local sports leader. Have a great weekend, everybody.